This is Conclave Conversations, a podcast for college students and young adults. Today's episode is sponsored by Metropolitan Church in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit metropolitanchurch.net/conclave.
All right, well, welcome back. It is time for our next installment of Conclave Conversations, this time where we have where we get to have longer form discussions with various people. We've had discussions about coffee and Christ. We've had different discussions about real world situations that people have had. We've talked about movies and how that relates to Christianity. And today, I'm joined by a couple people today. We are joined first by Conclave's own Chesley Bristow. Welcome back, Chesley.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you back with us. And Chesley has brought with her today Terry Williams. He is the associate pastor at the Healing Place Church in Trustville, and he is also a licensed professional counselor. So, Terry, we're so glad you're with us today.
Glad to be here.
Are you? This your first time being on a podcast, or have you been down that road before?
I've done some tapes, but this is the first one like this.
Yeah, we started out in a closet, our show.
Okay.
So they moved us around. So we're pretty proud of this space, but where we come from has been kind of funny. But this is a new venture, our conversations part. So we're so glad you get to be with us, spend a few minutes with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
So tell us your area of expertise. As I said, you're a licensed professional counselor. You've been in ministry over 40 years, you said. In your role now as a counselor, tell us what your area of expertise is, I guess, or what you see a lot of.
Well, I guess I'd call myself a generalist because we don't turn anyone away. At my office, the Healing Place, we provide free counseling. And so whoever comes in the door, we'll see them at least once or twice and sometimes refer out. But most of the time we'll see them a few sessions and sometimes longer. But I see in anything from I see children minimally, teenagers, a lot of young adults, college, career, young marriage. I do a lot of grief counseling, mental health, a lot of premarital counseling or even pre-engagement counseling.
Yeah.
I see a lot of families that are broken and trying to deal with adultery or some type of issue, a lot of addiction counseling. And that's basically what any other therapist will see. But I see it and deal with it not only professionally, but on the basis of Christ and or on the basis of the Word of God. And it's been successful. I've been at the church, I think, almost 9 years. Before that, I worked at Bradford Healthcare, and I worked with addiction. And before that, while I was in graduate school, I worked as a hospice chaplain. Before that, I was a pastor. So that's my journey.
You've seen the gambit.
Seen it all. Seen it all. Nothing surprises me.
It's interesting the road that you've taken, because I was talking to someone just yesterday, and he feels a call to ministry, and he says, you know, I really feel like maybe I should go down the road of being a counselor. And I said, that's so interesting you said that. I said, because there's lots of pastors that give counseling, quote unquote counseling, but like, for instance, people will come talk to me, but then I will say, though, but we are not a licensed counselor, you know, and so we always make that preface, and so that there is a need for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's a strong need for that, and so I told him, I said, man, that this is a great thing that you're wanting to do, you know, so that you can, you know, you're going to ministry, but you want to get that professional license, and that really is very helpful down the road. What was it like? You mentioned about Bradford. You know, that's something that, as young people, either everyone probably knows someone that has battled some type of addiction. I know we've had people that have come through our doors that maybe is with us for a season or two, that have part of their story is addiction. Tell us what that's kind of like to be around that day in and day out for the and a lot of them are probably 18 to 30 year olds.
Yeah, well It's interesting, you know, when I was coming up, you thought of addiction as they're bad people or their sin or something. But I learned that addiction was 60 to 70% hereditary. it can be passed down just like heart disease or something else.
Yeah.
And I found that a lot of the times, most of the time, the people that were in addiction, they didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
It was basically a prison. The word addiction comes from an addiction from a Latin word that means enslaved to or bound to, and so it was something that as they got involved in it, maybe there are certain drugs that you can use, and bam, you're addicted right off the bat. So first of all, working in addiction, it's very humbling because it's, oh, thank God, if it weren't for the grace of God, there I might be. Mm-hmm. But it can also be frustrating, mm-hmm. because people that suffer with addiction, many times they want to get clean and sober, but there's that draw, and the way the brain works, the way addiction is formulated and takes place, it will absolutely take one's life over. You know someone, some of the hallmarks of addiction is the fact that they have cravings for this addiction or for the substance. You know, they try to stop but mm-hmm. can't stop.
Yeah.
And according to medical journals, it is chronic, progressive, and fatal. In other words, if, you know, a lot of times people, especially people, will try to stop using, and if it, and they may stop for a while, but if they ever have another taste of alcohol mm-hmm. or ever have another drug, maybe they've had a surgery or something, and mm-hmm. the addiction will crank back up. Neuroimaging shows us that when these individuals, when they have a drug or a mood altering substance, their brain will light up like a Christmas tree, mm-hmm. and it's an ongoing struggle and battle that you know, many people stress with. And to be frank, a lot of times the church doesn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
If they would just quit,
just quit.
You know, just don't do it. You know, and just say no.
Right.
And when addiction has been established, just say no doesn't work.
Yeah. What is, you know, I have a family member that's in the medical field, and when he was in his residency, he saw fingers blown off by fireworks and things like that. So they never wanted us to do those kind of things. And so is it the same when you work in a place like you have, you worked in with Bradford,
yeah.
does it really give you pause when you're around people who begin the discussions? You know, we hear this a lot of times, especially the young adults when they've turned 18 and 21 is coming around, and that then begins the discussion. You know, mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to follow Jesus, but I've got family members that you know, about drinking.
Yeah.
You know, does your perspective change because of your experience at with addiction?
No. From that perspective, I was raised at a pastor's home.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know that.
Pentecostal pastor's home.
Yes, sir.
And I was always afraid of what my dad would do.
That's right.
You know, I feared Jesus, but I feared Ed more.
Uh-huh.
And so I never had that. And then at 17, that was never an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But as I came to understand what addiction was like and how it can impact the brain and how memories are laid down, mm-hmm. and how just through the act itself, it can take hold of a person. I'm very fortunate that mm-hmm. that I lived the sober teetotaling lifestyle that I did. I guarantee you this: I was an addict to sweet tea and fried chicken.
Yeah,
and you know, you can tell by looking at me. I have to watch and mm-hmm. you know weight wise, I, you know, because didn't drink. Sure, I sure could throw down some food.
Yeah, me too. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, but there are people who didn't grow up.
Yeah.
The way we did, the three of us did in this room. Yeah, I was the same way. It, you know, I would be banished right now if I wore shorts in the sanctuary. You know, I couldn't do that, let alone. But there's a lot of people who weren't raised like that. And so you can't, it's hard to take that approach with them to say, well, the way I was brought up, well, that doesn't mean anything to them. But coming from when you've seen person after person after person that at some point it started with a night of drinking, an escapade with drugs. Does it gives you an opportunity to take it from a different perspective as well.
Yeah. So here's some of the stories I heard, like, Clint, for instance, people would tell me, I didn't feel good in my own skin. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I was good enough, pretty enough, smart enough. So the first time I used drugs, it was like, ooh, I was 6 feet tall and bulletproof, and mm-hmm. I felt confident, and I felt like I had it all together.
Yeah.
You know, then there's those that were always nervous and upset. And when they took a drug to calm them down, mm-hmm. they felt like, okay, I can deal.
Right.
You know, I can deal with the anxiety. I can deal with the trauma or even the struggle of talking to some guy mm-hmm. or some new job.
Yeah.
And not realizing that some anxiety is normal and it's good. I mean, I felt anxious when I walked in here tonight.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so it's normal, but we're in such a day that people don't want to feel anything.
Uh-huh.
Now, some of the things that I would see also, though, when I was at Bradford, I would see a lot of individuals that came from broken families. Mom and dad got a divorce. Mm-hmm. I actually worked. Two or three years, I was in the all-female cottage. And so I worked with females from 18 even up to their 60s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of those individuals struggled with mom and dad divorced, or there was some type of sexual trauma, mm-hmm. or there was, you know, family issues, or not accepted. There's even a propensity, and I don't know I haven't read the research on it lately, but people who had weight issues and had gastric mm-hmm. bypass surgeries, I saw a trend where many of those individuals, if they use substances, would become addicted. It lended itself to ongoing addiction issues just because the whole system of the body had changed.
Yeah.
So there were all kinds of issues.
Right.
I did chapel there every Sunday. I would preach to those who were patients, usually about 100, mm-hmm. 120 people that were patients there. And we offered that. It was actually something that was mandated. They didn't have to come, but they mm-hmm. came. And I would see out in the audience, I'd see people crying.
Yeah.
I'd have people come up and we would talk and pray at the end of the service. Pastors' kids, mm-hmm. ministers' wives, school teachers, moms, soldiers. But one particular incident I remember was a man came up to me and he said, last Sunday, I was given an altar call in my own church where I was the pastor. And so I said, well, tell me your story. He said, when I got saved 20 years earlier, I was an alcoholic. I quit. I never touched a drop. But when I fell a couple of years ago and I had to have a back surgery, they gave me opioids mm-hmm. for pain. And he said, my addiction kicked off and I have not been able to stop.
Yeah.
And so I started doctor shopping and doing mm-hmm. all that. And that's how the addiction kicked off for him.
Right.
So we don't, we really don't. I try to get, I teach a lot of ministers about mm-hmm. addiction and mental health. Uh-huh. One of the things I try to get them to see is it's more than just the devil made me do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. There might be some commonality in some of the stories, but everybody's is a little unique.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
A little unique. And one of the words you brought up was anxiety. And of course, college students, young adults, young professionals, young marrieds. Let's be honest. That's anxiety. Like you said, that's something that all of us battle with. And during our talk, Chesley, that's something that you brought up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think it was interesting. Someone reached out to me last night and they text me. And any minister knows the thoughts you have going through your mind. They text you and they say, hey, when are you available to talk?
Yeah.
You know, and your mind starts running. Oh my goodness, what am I about to hear? Right. Mm-hmm. The conversation to me usually ends with, now look, you know, it's okay if you want to tell your wife, but I'd rather no one else hear this. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of the hallmarks of getting to go to a licensed counselor is that confidentiality. How important was that to you, Chesley?
It was very important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could kind of just rant about friends, closest friends, mm-hmm. parents,
whoever.
Sisters, somebody that I just saw walking down the street, and I knew that he wasn't going to go and tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very comforting for me.
Because it seems to me that is... Terry, that's something that's, I know it's just an understood thing, but it gives people such a sense of relief. I think that is very appealing to people because, you know, there's so many people out there that say, yeah, you can tell me anything, steel trap and all that. And then you find out, wow, there's holes all in that boat, you know.
And most people my age, like you tell somebody, like, don't tell somebody, or somebody will tell me that. And I'm like, ugh. But my best friend's got to know, like me and my best friend, or right. me and my sister, uh-huh. like, you know.
I'm not supposed to tell anybody this, but
yeah,
you're the exception.
There's that one person.
Right.
There's always going to be at least one person that if you tell somebody something, unless you're that person's yeah. person.
But we all have things where we don't even want the Lord to know, let alone anybody else.
Yeah.
And so to find somebody that you can really pour it out to and have zero worries about it leaving those four walls has to bring some kind of comfort, doesn't it?
Yeah, I find that's one of the strong points of counseling is knowing, because usually they'll say, everything's confidential, right?
Yeah, right.
And yeah, everything's confidential unless you're going to hurt yourself or mm-hmm. someone else.
Yeah.
And usually when I say that, sometimes you have, it's like peeling an onion and uh-huh. it takes a little bit of time. And sometimes it's just like, letting it all
because
out.
Because they found yeah. that safety.
And
right?
and building the rapport, that's, you know, when they realize that, when those individuals realize, hey, this guy or this girl is safe and mm-hmm. They've got my best interest and it's about them, it's mm-hmm. about me as the client and it's okay,
mm-hmm.
nothing's going to shock this person.
Right.
There's a real freedom. And the research shows that with mental health issues, while medication works, really, talk therapy is one of the best things that you can do, uh-huh. especially if you're struggling with some type of depression or anxiety or whatever.
I started out dreading coming. Yeah. He knew it too. I did not want to go. Mom had to like force me to go. But uh-huh. after a few weeks, I was like, all right,
yeah.
when do I get to come next?
Right.
Like I got to where I got excited to come because I knew that I could spill everything out and not mm-hmm. have to hold it in.
And how has things changed? You know, it seems like everyone's work, you know, in some form or another has been affected by COVID. I'm sure yours has not been immune to that. What has counseling been like in the COVID world since March?
Well, I've done a lot of telehealth. As a matter of fact, today I saw my last face-to-face client for a while. Because we're just because
yeah.
of the risk,
uh-huh.
I'm going to telehealth, and that's okay. You can mm-hmm. do that effectively, and really you don't miss a beat. I found some clients prefer that.
Yeah, I could see that.
I've also found that people are more apt to do it, and it extends my ability to see people. More than just in the Birmingham area, I see them from Sand Mountain to South Alabama to even just all over Tuscaloosa, uh-huh. and that helps, you know, especially now because COVID is wearing,
mm-hmm.
we're getting tired of it,
yeah,
and now this go around now after Thanksgiving and probably another big deal. I heard today that there were several. I think over 1,000 added had been diagnosed since yesterday.
Wow.
And so it's like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So it is impacting mm-hmm. the mental health scene. I had some statistics. I read something the other day. Prior to COVID, 8.5% of adults, and this is from the CDC, mm-hmm. 8.5% of the U.S. adults reported depression. that number has risen to 28%, three times higher just in, you know, since about March.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's significant.
Well, and when you say depression, you know, that word can be thrown around loosely. Like if Alabama had lost the Iron Bowl, I would have probably said loosely, I'm so depressed. I can't listen to sports for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. But I'm not really sure. That's probably not clinically. What does that truly mean for with that statistic? What does that truly mean for depressed?
Well, you know, some of the symptoms of depression is melancholy, blue, no interest in life, can't get up out of bed, can't stop crying, loss of interest. Just pulling into themselves. The symptoms are so many. Feeling tired in the body. Feeling pain, having pain in the body. Those are some of the symptoms. Withdrawing from church, not getting out. Those are. There's so many. Then on the other hand is that there's the anxiety. I can't get, you know, I can't be still. I can't stop. I'm nervous about everything. I'm tearful about everything. you know, I jump at you know, any slammed door or any raised voice. You know, there's so many. Just so many.
And when somebody falls into that category, it's kind of like where you're talking about where when people are really battling addiction, people on the outside can say, well, just stop. Well, is it the same sometimes when people, when you find people that are depressed and are clinically depressed, you know, and it's easy for people on the outside to say, well, just get out of bed. You know, get out of bed, go for a run. You'll feel better.
Just be happy.
Right. Just be happy.
Get over it.
Yeah.
You don't have to be worried about that.
Yeah, and I think that that's a real issue that a lot of people battle is they think, well, no one really understands because my support system doesn't get it. My support system says just be happy, just get out, but it's hard for them to do that. What are some ways that if that's someone that's really going through that they don't have a support system and they're just look, I'm just trying to find some kind of hope in this. What are some first steps that someone can do? Or if they just feel like, hey, I feel like I'm going down the hill. You know, I'm on that road to depression. What are some things that they can do?
Well, I think one of the first things is tell somebody. Of course, as a Christian, I'm always, you know, let's talk to God about that, get in the Word. But there are times when you are so depressed and anxious that you don't have that ability. You can't focus. There's lack of focus. And sometimes you just need somebody to sit with you and hear your story and hear your heart and I say something like, you know, I see you've really been struggling, or I can see why you feel that way, and validate those feelings. There are times when exercise will help. Exercise certainly helps anxiety. Getting out and trying to laugh and getting involved will help with depression. Laughter does good, like a like a medicine.
Right.
And so those are all things that can happen. But sometimes you're going to have more than that. Sometimes it's going to be through talking and realizing, ooh, I just lightened my load. And many times people tell you once they leave a counselor's office, they're exhausted, but they feel much lighter inside. And that, like I've been heard. And so, and maybe the tears, that's a way to help. Go ahead and have a good cry.
Yeah.
Have a good, yelling session, whatever you got to do. Those things help with anxiety. Sometimes you have to have medication, but that's not the first place you need to go.
Right.
In my opinion, and I'm not a physician, but I think a lot of times there are other things that can be done to alleviate some of the depression, some of the stress. I was looking at a little presentation, some of the stats, and with the age group you're knocking at the door on, 21.4% of adolescents 13 to 18 experience mental health concerns in a year. So, you know, it goes across the board. So, you know, those numbers are crazy. Suicide, Let me give you some suicide rates. This is fresh out of the CDC from 2018. In 2018, there were 48,344 suicides. 48,000. It's the 10th leading cause of death. There are 132 suicides daily.
Yeah.
There are approximately 1.4 million attempts yearly, and those are the ones that are just being reported.
Right, yeah.
And then there are 5 million living Americans who have attempted suicide at some point. And the numbers from a meeting I was in a couple of weeks ago, they were telling us that the numbers are going to go up exponentially.
Yeah, when it's 2022, 2023, and the numbers come back for 2020, it's likely that that number is going to make 2018's number pale in comparison.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of the group that are involved in this, older teens, older teens, young adults, their suicide rate increased 76%. The group that Conclave ministers to has increased 76% from 2007 to 2017.
Yeah.
So that tells me right there that there is a great need for mental health care, for coaches, mental health coaches, someone that will come alongside and talk with and work with and realize that I'm not alone.
Yeah.
If people can realize I'm not alone and there's not something wrong with me. What do you think, Chesley?
I mean, yeah, because none of my friends did therapy or something like that, or like dealt with, a bunch of my friends didn't deal with what I was dealing with. I thought I was weird. I thought, even though I had gone through something and there was a reason for it, but I still thought it was weird. So that's why I didn't want to go. So that might be a bunch of people's reasonings for not reaching out, is because they think, oh, they're not going through it. I think another thing is people throw the words around so loosely nowadays.
Sure.
Like you said earlier, they feel a little bit, then they're like, oh, I have anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, before I went through what I went through and it got really bad, I will admit I did that. I'd be like, oh, I'm so depressed.
Yeah.
But I think because it's thrown around so lightly, people don't take it as serious anymore.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main issues I think of right now, is just it's just thrown around so lightly that it's not taken as serious when it needs to be.
It's like the boy who cried wolf almost, because you hear it so much.
Yeah.
It's like, you'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's one of the main issues, especially with it, as much as it's increasing in 2020, because it's just thrown around so easily.
Yeah. I think one of the things that, I've always heard that, the holidays is just a terrible time.
Yeah.
It's such a joyous time, but yet it's a really, it's a struggle for a lot of people. And, but because we follow Jesus, we feel like there is also hope.
Yeah.
Why don't we close on that thought and talk about that, how there is hope for people that are out there who are really, really in the thick of it right now. What kind of hope is out there for them?
Well, certainly I always go to just the fact that Jesus gives us peace that passes all understanding. I think part of the issue is that we go everywhere else first. The scripture calls him in Isaiah the wonderful counselor. And that's absolutely one of the first places to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes an individual may need some help getting there, trying to feel like, okay, I'm worthy to go to him. That's the reason I there are all types of counselors out there, and I honor all of those, but I certainly am thankful to be able to work in a situation where the Word of God is foundational, and prayer is a part of the counseling process. So there are a lot of counselors that do that. And I think that has to be a part of the process. Going to him, figuring out how not to isolate and be alone, having a safe place, safe pastor, a safe place to worship, having the ability to go to someone and tell them exactly how I feel, and not have them say, "Oh, you shouldn't feel that way." Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that helps, I think, is to validate their feelings and say, "Hey, I see how you feel that way. That must have been very painful. Man, that must have been hard to go through. Tell me a little about that." You know, all of those things, really, we're told in Scripture to bear one another's burdens. Mm-hmm. And having a safe place to go where I know that I will be heard, I will be loved, I will be cared for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that I don't have to fear what they think about me. I mean, that's a really big deal there. Uh-huh. We're always worried about what somebody thinks about us. Yeah. And getting to the point where this is where I'm at, and I just need some help.
Right.
And being able to ask for that help is critical.
Well, I know you didn't come on for this, but when we started Conclave Radio and Conclave Conversations, my vision has always been I would want a college student in Indiana to get it just as good as a college student that goes to church here.
Yeah.
You know, that can be benefit all across the board. So, but if you're someone that is local, I know you're doing telehealth and you didn't come here for this reason, right, but I want to make that accessible. How, if someone was listening and they wanted to reach out and start that conversation, they say, "Wow, there really is hope. May the Lord directed me to listen to this for the first time." How is the way that they can reach out and get in touch with you to start that process?
They can call the office at 205-655-5000, the Healing Place Church, and there'll be someone there to help. They'll get them on our schedule, and we don't turn anyone away. Mm-hmm. It's a ministry of compassion for the church, and then if there's something that I don't feel like I can handle efficiently, I'll refer to. I know a lot of counselors in the Birmingham area, and I'll refer to one of them if I feel like they need medication.
Right.
You know, I've had people, I've had their family take them to the hospital because of the peril they were in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is help out there. and then there's also the suicide, if there's ever anybody that's suicidal.
Yes.
The suicide hotline, I can't remember the number right off the top of my head. But that is, and I'm terrible with these things that we call iPhones. It's just the suicide hotline.
Sure.
They can Google suicide hotline.
Absolutely.
But there's anywhere in the U.S., there's someone there. 1-800 number.
That's willing to listen.
Yeah.
24 hours a day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming. Chesley, we appreciate you making this happen for us.
Yes, thank you.
And she's all right, isn't she?
She's pretty great. She's pretty great. So, Terry, thanks so much for coming. I know this has been a great benefit for people who listen to Conclave Conversations, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Thank you.